Hello, everybody. Welcome back to a brand new episode of Bell With Us podcast. Today, we have with us Dr. Nancy Thomas. She is the co-founder of Academiac Online, which is a platform for teachers to provide resources. And she's also the program director for counseling at Colorado Christian University and one of our very good friends. So thank you so much, Nancy, for being here. We are so grateful that you are here today.
Yeah, absolutely. Thank you so much for the invite. I'm glad to be here.
Yeah. So before we start, do you mind telling us a bit about yourself? I know I just said pretty quickly, but you know, maybe emphasizing on what you guys do.
Sure. Yeah, absolutely. So I started off as a licensed professional counselor, and now I am a supervisor for LPCs, and then also I got my PhD in counseling. So I've gone on to teach at Colorado Christian University's counseling master's program, and so I get to integrate the faith and mental health in all the work that I do, right, in all my teaching and all my counseling, and so that's really fun for me. I'm also married. I've been married for going on 10 years. Wow. And we've got two little kids. They're 7 and 4 and a half. So we have a lot of fun. We stay busy. And life is good. God has been good to us.
Yeah, we see that. We see it all on Instagram. So can you tell us, like, why you want to take a step? Why did you want to pursue a path in counseling?
Yeah, that's a great question. I really didn't know, and I think some people find it funny when they hear this, I didn't know that the counseling profession existed until halfway through college. Because, I mean, our community, we don't talk about counseling. We don't talk about our problems at all. So I didn't know this was a thing. I was never exposed to it. And so about halfway through college, whenever I learned that you could do this for a living, I literally, that was my question. I was like, that's a profession? Like, you can do this for a living? Right. And then my friend who was talking to me, she said, yeah, that's really a profession. And I was like, wow, it just felt like exactly where God had place my heart, right? The core desire of my heart when I was exploring career paths was just that of just walking beside hurting people. And so it felt like I had struck gold, and with how, like, this was exactly where I felt God had gifted me. And so that's what I did. I changed my career really quickly and changed my whole degree plan, all the things. But in a couple of days, I felt like, wow, I was where God wanted me to be. So, it was a bit of a journey. It was a little bit of a hiccup there in my plan, but, you know, God had a plan, and it was 100%. Very obvious how he allowed every step of the way after that unfold. And so I'm thankful I'm here.
First of all, I just want to say thank you. Yeah. I just want to say thank you for taking that, you know, and taking the risk and doing something that's against the grain. Mm-hmm. A lot of times, my wife is actually a social worker. Mm-hmm. So just being married to her, I've learned a lot about counseling, a lot about trauma. Mm-hmm. And I realize how much it impacts the regular conversations you have with people every day, the type of, how people kind of grow up and how, you know, certain things can affect the way they grow up, mm-hmm. and it changes, like, your worldview in general. So first of all, I just want to say thank you for doing that. Any word of advice for people? Because same thing for my wife. It was it was changing that career path for her, because she did nursing.
Yeah.
And changing that career path for her was a little bit difficult, especially for explaining it to her family, her parents. But she always tells me, this is the most worth it decision that she ever made in her life, because of the impact that she gets to make on people every single day. So I guess from your perspective, how was that challenge for you? And what is something that you would encourage people who are watching that probably have the same desire in their hearts?
Yeah. I think I hear you, right? Mm. Like, it was such a hard season because, like, no one understood, especially with such a quick change that no one understood. My family didn't understand. They thought I was probably crazy, but I was leaning into what the Holy Spirit was speaking in my heart, right? And just realizing that this was where God is calling me, and there was a different sense of peace and about that decision that I hadn't had in up until that point in my career.
Yeah.
And so, you know, that word, like, when we're driven by our purpose and what God has called us to, it's a different level of strength. It's a different level of peace.
Yep.
And that drives you, right? And that's what motivated me through, like, early on when I first got out of school, it was so difficult. I was like, what am I doing in private practice? I don't know the first thing about marketing. Matthew knows. Like, I didn't know what I was doing.
And then taking a lot of risk.
Yeah, but it was that sense of, like, this is where I'm called to be that got me through it. And so if the people that are listening, right, if you are called to be in a profession that doesn't feel like along the lines of what maybe your family wanted or what maybe you even thought or planned for yourself, I think there's just something to be said about where God is calling you to be. And God paves a path. right? Yeah. And that's kind of evidence in itself. It's been really beautiful to see over the years how the people that were like, what are you doing, have come back to me and said, wow, I see why you're meant for this. Wow. Like, you were meant for this. And so just to see that happen and that that 180 shift, it was like, wow, God, thanks. Thanks for this, like, the things that came to fruition over time. Of course, over time, right?
Yes.
During that season, that wasn't easy, but God is faithful.
Yeah.
I think it takes extra grace to be in counseling.
Patience.
And patience. Yeah. Definitely not for me. So.
You never know.
But speaking of that, like, how do you think, like, trauma or, like, counseling is taken? Like, you know, I think we've grown drastically over the last few years in our community.
Yeah.
Because ever before 2020, I don't think nobody ever actually wanted to look for counseling. Yeah. We were like, no, it doesn't exist.
Yeah.
And after 2020, I mean, it's ironic. Today's, like, March 17 or 18. Yeah, it's, like, a few days back.
Oh,
like,
yeah,
you know, it's
right.
March 13. Like, you know, three years back, you know, the whole world shut down. Yeah. And then, you know, everybody was, like, forced to sit in their, you know, homes. Especially, like, for me, it was the craziest time because I'm super extroverted. I love going out. I was in my house for months. I'm like, I felt like I was in jail.
Yeah.
So, and I know that's, like, the most people actually had that feeling.
Yeah.
So how do you feel, like, you know, like, after that, like, the pre-COVID and the post-COVID era, how do you think that counseling has impacted much more? We see that a lot of people stepping into counseling, a lot of people pursuing it as a profession.
Yeah.
And so how do you see that, and what do you feel about it, and how do you think, like, you know, as not just as counselors but as individuals, how do you think we can make a difference towards that?
Yeah, there's been a lot of changes post-COVID, right? I think that we've seen just this incline of mental health, mental unwellness, but at the same time, I think there's also this other side of, like, we're throwing around these words as if, like, it's like everyday language. Like, I hear, like, more and more adolescents and teenagers saying, I'm depressed, I'm anxious, I'm like, wait, let's talk about the meaning of that, right? And so I think I see both sides. In our community especially, I see a lot more openness to kind of facing those mental health struggles in a way that I haven't seen before. I think we still have room for growth, because I think the more we allow ourselves to see those things and be open to what is really going on, then we can do something about it, right? And so I've always said, if we don't have the awareness, we can't do anything with it, right? If I don't know that something's wrong, then how can I do anything about it, right?
Yes.
And so I think we've got to continue to grow in that area, and so that proper awareness, though, right? Not just calling everything trauma or everything depression, right? Because that's not appropriate either. Let's deal with it for what it is, as opposed to, because it can become this, like, I don't know, like this word that's thrown around very lightly and loosely too, and we want to be careful to do either.
Either or, it can cause damage if we don't assess it properly.
Exactly.
That's so good.
Yeah.
Finding the right resources, you know, pointing people to the right resources.
Exactly.
And now what I love is, especially like the path that you've taken, it's encouraging more people to step into this field. Because before, one thing my wife and me would always say is we would struggle to find South Asian counselors, you know, people who are in that field that we feel comfortable sending.
Right.
Our, like, especially, like, we're pastors at our church, and a lot of times we want to find the right help for the people that ask for it. But, like, me and my wife always joke about this, but, like, we send a few of them to, like, you know, different counseling centers and stuff, and they can oftentimes relate with our culture. You know, they'll say things like, oh, your parents are that way, just leave your parents, you know?
Right, yeah.
And so it doesn't really work like that in a South Asian home, as you may know. And so I'm just glad that more people are stepping into this field and pointing them to the right resources, you know, in our community. So that I just want to say, thank you again, know, I'm very just thankful for that. So in that sense, like, just talking about just having resources, assessing things properly, what advice can we give, especially to people in our community? Because I know, especially as a South Asian pastor, before I married my wife, I had no clue on any of this stuff.
You know,
our parents would often say, oh, pray about it.
That's right.
You know, or recently the term that I'm, like, really not liking a lot is, like, they used to say, like, pranda. Meaning this person is crazy, you know?
Yeah.
And I know that's not a good term to tell someone who's struggling with something. Mm-hmm. So how can we encourage our people just to be more sensitive and be more aware?
Yeah, I think it has to start with the leadership, right? I think if leadership is going to be open to have those conversations, then it normalizes it for the people, right? Because there is still this great discomfort with even having the conversation. But if, like, I've heard pastors on the, and not necessarily in our community, but pastors on the pulpit saying two different things. We either, like, don't worry about that, you just pray about it. Yeah. Or versus, like, really just being open with their own struggle and just the difference it makes in the congregation when a leader can model what we want our congregants to do. Yeah. And so, and I'm not talking about just pastors, right? Mm-hmm. All the youth leaders, right? I think we've all been in positions of leadership where we have the potential to impact the younger generation or even other congregants. And so just making sure we, like, that's a part of our responsibility, each of ours, right? Mm-hmm. To engage in those kinds of conversations. So, like, being open and vulnerable with our struggles. So something me and my husband try to do a lot with our, like, younger couples is share some of our struggles in marriage and go, hey, this is something we've really had a hard time with. And so just to normalize it and go, you can talk to us about it because we're a safe place because we've been through it, right? Yeah. And so I think it has to start with that openness to have those conversations. And there's a lot of vulnerability in that that's hard because especially in our community, our fear is, you know, like your grandmother and your aunt and your uncle and everyone's going to know about it within like 3 seconds. And And so I hear it and I understand, but at the same time, it's got to start somewhere.
Yeah.
And I think leadership is a great place for that to start.
Right. Yeah. I think, like, I mean, not judging our community, but I think our community, obviously, we take it lightly than mental health issues, like, especially before 2022. I mean, if someone went and said, okay, I'm having issues, the first thing that, if it's a pastor or, like, you know, any person that says, I mean, yes, definitely, you need to pray, but also there's more to it, you know. It's not just, like, easy to just pray about it, but you need to talk to someone, like, you need to process it out. And I think most cases, we fail to see that, and we just, like, I mean, definitely, God is there, God definitely heals us, but also God actually plays, I mean, when you get sick, you don't say, like, okay, I'm not going to the doctor, God will heal me. Yeah. I mean, definitely, God plays doctors and surgeons in this world for a reason, even even the Gospel of Luke was written by a doctor. So definitely doctors are placed within our community, within the world, because God wanted them to be.
Yeah.
So I think, you know, I think after faith base, I think we also need to think, like, you know, with the wisdom that God has given us. And, and I think that's where, like, you know, that's where, like, the whole thing changed when 2020 happened, like, the whole struggle came. And, like, one of our friends, Pastor Bonnie Andrews, so he tells us that, shout out to Pastor Bonnie.
Yeah.
He does a lot of work in the mental health field. And I was talking to him very recently, and he was telling me they did a survey in the tri-state area and New York. And almost like all the cities and all the states over there, and they saw that 55% of students actually want to talk to someone about mental health.
Mm.
So that's like one in two students that you find in a campus actually have that issue. So I think, like, we it's much more of a bigger issue, and it's more of a social issue if we actually think about it than what we see.
Mm.
And most cases, at the end of the day, the whole thing is, like, everybody needs Jesus, right?
Yeah.
And it's like, you know, I think that's a baseline. You know, he's the solution to everything that we can, you know, we actually face in our life, and especially in mental health field. You know, how do you think about, like, you know, when, like, in a statistics phase, like, you know, when we see like that much, like, how do you think as individuals, like, how can we promote that in our community, and how do you think, like, we can actually help out? I know we're not supposed to go any give any counseling or anything, but what do you think? Like, are some proactive steps as, like, as youth leaders or community leaders that we can take?
I think it's like awareness, right? Is that for, I said it a second ago, awareness of what we need and what the people need is going to be important, because we have to know the difference between, there are some things that a mentor or a pastor or a leader can provide in terms of, like, lay counseling, right? And just Christian counseling, right? But then there's a difference, and then it goes on that spectrum, and it, when it gets to the more severe end, to know and have the discernment and wisdom to know this is beyond my scope, and we do need to call in for those resources, that's going to be really important. And then also just knowing our resources. I think you make a really good point about, like, God has given us this wisdom and the resources that are out there in counselors and psychiatrists and psychologists to help us, support us through it, right? It's not God's intention for us to live in this unwellness. We're supposed to live prosperous lives, right? God has that for us. And so just being careful to know when we've got to hand the baton on to a professional, right? And then, you know, engaging in those conversations, especially with the younger generation, I think that's so important. If we can get them talking about some of these things and helping them to see that, hey, they're not alone,
right?
And that's so important. Mm-hmm. I think one of the most powerful verses in the Bible, in the shortest, is Jesus wept, right? Mm-hmm. It was, he knew that he was going to raise Lazarus from the mm-hmm. dead, and still he was weeping with his sisters, right? Mm-hmm. And so to know that the power of presence and just sitting with people in their hurt and in their pain, mm-hmm. But then also knowing, hey, like, I see your pain, and I'm going to feel the pain with you, mm-hmm. even though I know I'm about to raise your brother from the dead, right? But still, just know, like, he saw us and validated those feelings. And so sometimes the most powerful thing we can do is be present with people, right? Not try to fix it, not try to give advice, not to try to throw scripture at them, you know, whatever. Like, just sitting with people in their, like, pain, in their joy, like, yes. whatever it might be, yeah. right? And just being able to go, I see you, I hear you, and I don't need to say anything else. That's so painful.
Right.
And just sitting in that with them. I think that's just so powerful.
Wow. Yeah. It's like creating, I feel like, safe spaces
Correct.
For people. Mm-hmm. Especially, like, I think in churches, too, like, we need to be more proactive of creating that safe space for people to come. And that's what the church is, right?
Right.
100%.
It should be a place where people can talk about their stories, their struggles, yeah. and stuff like that.
Yeah.
And just, I guess, to take it another layer for you, I think this will help a lot of people who are watching. Mm-hmm. So if a kid comes up to a leader, or you see a kid that's maybe, you know, a little change in character, mm-hmm. something has changed,
mm-hmm.
It could be anxiousness, we can assess it as depression. How do leaders, what's the next step that they take? If a kid comes in and be like, I'm struggling through this, mm-hmm. or we see a change in character, mm-hmm. What would you advise us or leaders or people who are watching?
Mm-hmm.
What's a good next step? Yeah. Which they should do.
Yeah. First of all, it depends on the age of the kid,
okay.
right? If it's an adolescent teenager, a little bit older, closer to adulthood, I would continue to engage in conversation with the child, right? And
mm-hmm.
just get to be like on the journey with them a little bit,
okay.
and connect with them, really have relationship with them and walk along that journey. Now, if it's younger, then you want to have conversations with maybe their Sunday school teacher, their
mm-hmm.
parent, to see, hey, what am I missing here? What is the big picture here? Because older kids can speak to that, right? Younger
okay.
kids may not be able to. But then also, really being careful to know this confidentiality piece is a big piece, right?
Yeah.
So with the younger kids or older kids, you want to be able to be transparent and go, hey, if I'm going to have a conversation with your parent, I'm going to tell you I'm going to have a conversation with your parent, so that relationship isn't disrupted, right? And so we can continue to engage in this journey together.
Mm-hmm.
So really the best advice I could give is, like, just be with them, right? Listen to them, hear them out, and hear their struggle. Like, let's say there is something you can do about it or support, right? And empower them to do the thing, right? As opposed to jumping in and just fixing or making it all better. Let's say it's a hard conversation with the family or the parents, right? Walking through with them of, like, what could you say to the parent, or empowering them to do those difficult things. And then, of course, then knowing your limit and going, hey, it's gotten to this point and I can't help anymore, and I really need to advocate for you, perhaps, and go to your parent and be like, they need counseling, we need to get them professional help, and then that being okay and being willing to have those hard conversations too.
So yeah. Nancy, so another question, just to layer in that too, what about leaders that have kids who call, that are contemplating things like suicide?
Mm-hmm.
What can we do in those moments?
Yeah, the first thing you want to do is assess, right? How severe is this, right? Do they have a plan? Do they have a means for action, right? We don't want, first of all, asking about it is not going to make them more suicidal. So we want to ask the question outright, right?
Okay.
Like, do you have any harm? Do you have any plans to harm yourself? Do you have any suicidal thoughts, right? And just asking point blank, because that can be kind of scary to do sometimes, right? You want to kind of skirt around it. Do you maybe want to hurt? Like, you know, we're a little bit scared maybe sometimes to have those conversations. And so really just point blank asking, and then finding out how severe it is, right? Because if they have a means or if they have a plan or anything like that, that means that is beyond our scope, right?
Okay.
We need to get emergency help at that point, right? And making sure, like, if it's a minor, the parents are involved in making sure they get the help immediately, right?
Okay.
We don't want to disregard any of that as,
attention.
Like, these are the things I hear sometimes. It's attention seeking. It's
just
for, you know, for, like, their friend said it. And so now they're saying, you know, and we don't want to play with that, right? Because God forbid, right, they're intentional about this and they act on a plan, right? Then we knew that and had that information, because research shows that I think it's like 70 to 80% of the time people that have committed suicide or acted on suicidal ideation have told someone. within the last couple of days. And so that, you know, cry for help or not, right? There is a cry there of, I need you to see me. I'm struggling and I need you to hear me. And so if we are like, we want to take that seriously, right? We don't ever want to disregard that.
In many ways, it takes a lot of strength for them to even go out of their way to call someone too.
Exactly.
And I think sometimes with that comes a lot of fear, because this is where I remember when I was a youth leader in the beginning, it's a lot of discernment in the sense that they will say things like, please don't tell my parents.
Correct.
Or don't tell anyone. And honestly, that puts a lot of pressure, especially on someone who's like young, who's a youth leader, or someone who's a mentor, who, again, like you said, we don't have the skills or the knowledge ahead of time. So assessing it, and then would you go to the point of getting somebody involved in that, that might be a little bit more better equipped?
Oh, yeah, absolutely. Like I said, we don't want to take it lightly, right? And so when with my adolescents or my teenagers, I immediately have the counseling relationship is different, but I'd immediately tell them, right? I know you didn't want me to tell your parents. I get it, right? I was there before, right? We've all been there. There are things that we didn't want our parents to know, right?
Yeah, absolutely.
And so we can understand and validate that, but then also go, at this point, I'm afraid, right? I don't want you to harm yourself. I don't want you to harm anyone else, right? Whatever the situation might be. And just express your like deep, honest, sincere concern for them. So then they hear your heart behind needing to reach out to someone so that they don't take it. Like it's not then a rupture to the relationship or take it offensively or anything like that. And they're like, and then, you know, have that conversation with the parents too. And this is where a counselor can help and support with this, right?
Yeah.
But to make sure the parents aren't coming back and going, how dare you have said this to a youth leader? Like what, you know, because the shame associated with it, right?
Shame on
and, right. Yeah. So then it's so that the parents are educated then too, to have that conversation well and not just go and rail them because they've just now shared something they shouldn't have.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah. Thank you. This content is amazing. For people who are going to be watching.
Good,
because I'm pretty sure there's a lot of people that struggle and don't know what to do.
I know,
So this is so much, so helpful.
And such an important topic that we don't talk about enough.
We don't talk about it.
No.
And I think there was this incident, I think it was last year or I think the year before, in the last 2 years, I didn't hear about this. A Malu kid from a Malu household, he committed suicide. And which is actually pretty shocking. And one of the first reactions from some people were actually was like, what did he have so much that he had to suicide about? You know, I think that concept that we have. So how do we face that? Like, you know, I know it's like a totally different generation kind of issue.
Yeah.
And I think like we may understand because like our generation, we see that, like we see how all the things like, you know, especially in social media, that's like one of the, I mean, I love social media, but I think it also is one of the reasons because when people put out like the 10% good part of their life and hide the 90% of it, and I think it just sets a standard, you know, and just like, it just puts a standard like, so if Ruben, I'm just using you as an example. So like Ruben puts up something amazing and I start getting all guilty. I was like, oh no, what am I doing with my life? You know, and that kind of gets you, that thought creeps you in. But is this the 10% that you're evaluating about somebody else's
life?
Maybe less. Yeah, maybe less, exactly.
Yeah.
So, and then you're evaluating, probably.
Yeah.
So you're evaluating that with what you have. So, and then you start getting all these thoughts like, you know, oh, I'm not getting anywhere in life. And then you get all these insecurities creep in, which actually leads to even bigger issues.
Yeah.
And I don't think like our older generation sees that way, you know? I mean, the only thing they probably have is Facebook, so nothing more than that.
Yeah.
So, but how do you think like we can address with them, you know, what is one way that we can bridge that gap with the older generation to actually make sure that they are also involved in this, they also know how much of the mental health issue is actually at stake here?
Yeah, I think there's so much education needed, like our parents and our older generation, and really, truthfully, our younger generation too. I don't think everyone realizes the impact that social media has had. I mean, I think we're coming, I don't think we've seen the first of it, you know?
Yeah.
Like, I think it's just going to continue to get worse as we continue, because this is the first generation that has been exposed to social media from a very young age, screens from a very young age. So we're going to continue to see that impact as we go on. And I think there's a lot of education necessary for parents. I think parents are very limited. And I'm not blaming them, right? I do come with that conversation with a bit of a compassion, right? They didn't know that world,
right?
They didn't grow up with that. They don't know. And they're in a new country, and there's so much that they're learning as we they transition to life here. So you can't blame them, but I think it's so important to have some education around, look at what's happening, these are the trends, this is the impact it's having on your children. And so if you notice X, Y, and Z symptoms, then we've got to do something about it. We've got to act on that, right? And not just ignore it and just dismiss it as less than because your children are struggling. Mm-hmm. We talk about, when we talk about trauma, right? We say it doesn't matter if you and I could have gone through the exact same scenario at the exact same time, exact same period of life, and we could have experienced it completely differently. Mm-hmm. And I may have perceived it as trauma and you may not have. And so my body's stored response to that is way different than yours. And it's just a matter of it was me versus you. Mm-hmm. Right? And so just to help parents understand that it doesn't matter if your older daughter had a very different, symptoms and whatever experiences than your younger son. They just have very different life experiences. Totally, and what you have to trust is they one was affected and the other was not, or whatever that might be. So if one person is saying, I'm really anxious, or everyone in school is really giving me a hard time, you've got to trust them for their word, right? Yeah. They're trying to communicate something to you. And it may not be the whole story. There might be things that unfold, but at the same time, let them that's their story. Right. And that's all that matters, really. Right. Brain scans have literally showed all that matters is that their perception was that, Man, so yeah. So just making sure we're listening well.
Yeah. In many ways, I feel even parents nowadays are experiencing the same thing that this younger generation is, because even social media has become very rampant in their generation too. Yep. I know you're joking about Facebook and stuff, but I feel like even they're they're adopting social media now.
Yeah.
And they're now seeing the dangers. I've seen some people fake accounts on Facebook, so in many ways they're starting to see the pressures of social media comparison and that highlight reel we always talk about, right? Yeah. And I think I was talking to someone recently, for them too, they're going through their own internal processings and things that they're going through as well. So I have such a heart for even the older generation too, and for them, even me and my wife always talking, they finding some resources for them, helping them find help as well through all the things that they went through. So my prayer is, like you were saying, is we just bring more education, more awareness to the front.
Our church has a men's group, older men's group, and so they got together, and I was almost, I'm not gonna share too much, but some of the things that were coming up and the openness to have certain conversations, I was so impressed.
Yeah,
because they need that community, they need that support. And I don't think we realize, all of us do, right? And I don't think we realize until we start sharing, we're like, oh wait, we're kind of more similar than we thought, and there's things that we're hiding that I didn't have to hide, and I didn't have to struggle alone. And that's what ends up happening, that we all end up struggling alone sometimes. But to your point of our families are being affected if we're not careful, right? Yeah. My husband and I were just saying this past week, and we were talking about how we need to be more intentional when we're sitting with the kids, because what happens is we're on our phones and scrolling, and then the kids have to say something four times before we're like, oh, they're asking us a question.
Yeah.
And so we were catching ourselves, and we said, we've got to be more careful, right? Because they shouldn't have to ask for four times before we realize they're even saying something to us. And it's something simple, right? We're just scrolling, but that lack of attention that we're giving them, we never went through, I never went through, right? If I asked my parents, they would, whether they gave me the answer I wanted or not, that's a different story, but still they answered me. They didn't have this distraction, And so we've got to just be careful on so many fronts,
I think there's one of my very good friends. So he recently, he stopped using social media a few months back. Mm-hmm. So he's like, I have so much time on my plate now. He's like, I can pray more. I'm more closer with God. I mean, I'm not saying you should do that, but I think just I do this 1 hour time limit on social media. Yeah. I never keep up with it. That's another thing.
Ignore limit.
Ignore limit. That's what I do. And
four or five times.
I know.
Won't even give up on you. This guy is never going to listen to me.
This guy's not going
to.
I've got to shut down.
<That's> right.
So I think social media does have a lot of good things, where we actually can reach a lot of people within the community or outside the community around the world. Mm. But also at the same time, we don't put if it gets too much, it becomes a problem. So I think knowing when to put a stop at it, or knowing when to stop it or when to control it is also very necessary. That discernment. that controlling attitude is also very, like, self-discipline actually is very, and I know I'm talking because I can't even do that, but I'm I'm trying, you know, but I'm just like, I think, like, you know, I think we just as actively as individuals need to do that too.
Well, I think that's where community comes in too, right?
Right.
Like, I think this whole conversation, a little bit of a theme that we're seeing is there's some things we can take care of on our own, right? And other times where we have to call people in to support us, mentors, leaders, or counselors or whoever, right? And to call us out on things and to, and that's how God designed it to be, 100%. Right? It's that's true, how it's supposed to be.
And I was like, I try to encourage the next generation too, because like even with social media, like I feel like you get to choose what comes up on your feed, right? And so I remember earlier on, I was like, oh, I'm just gonna follow all these like funny meme pages and things like that, and then you just realize half your page is like nothing. Nothing beneficial for your life, you know? And so I just say, like, you know, the moment that you notice something that is not beneficial for your life, like, unfollow it, you know? And then start, like, populating your social media with things. So now it's like, for me, it's like Bible verses or sermon recaps, you know? And so at least, like, that way. And then once in a while, it's like basketball, sports highlights, you know? So at least once, in, like, I'm getting fed, you know? I'm getting spiritually fed. Mentally, I'm getting fed. And I even follow, like, a lot of, like mental health or like counselors, like, because they have a lot of like really helpful tips for you to conquer your day, help you get through your day. So like in many ways, like I even tell like the people at my church, like social media is like a tool, right? You won't use a hammer to brush your teeth,
correct?
You know,
because
it's dangerous.
Yes.
So you need to learn how to properly use social media to benefit your life and how you live your life.
Right.
So in many ways, it helps you grow, helps your, like you were saying, our community grow as well and stuff like that.
Well, it's like present day example of like if your arm is causing you to do sin, you cut off your arm. Like, evaluate for yourself, like what is causing harm in your life, in your body, right? And get rid of it.
Get rid of it.
Yeah.
No need.
I think one more aspect that comes into play is like mentorship. I really feel that that's very, very important in the 21st century, especially in 2023 and like going forward too, because I have a mentor, I have mentors in my life, so I make sure like every week I actually get in touch with them and talk to them. I was like, okay, this is nothing. I was like, chat, what's going on? Then they're like, what I did? And I'm just like, just to have a conversation, because they've known me for years, so if something is wrong, they get like that second. It's like, what's that? No, that doesn't sound like you. So I've had sessions where like, you know, where I'm not myself, where I'm a person who gets frustrated with little stuff, if some, like, especially in workspaces, like if something is not at place, like if a deadline is not met, I get really mad, and then like I'm not myself, you know. And one of my mentors found that, and he was like, Matthews, that's not right. You shouldn't do that. You know, you need to learn patience. You need to have peace. So it kind of transformed me, and I think that mentorship is very needed. I just don't think that we actually look up to mentors in right now. We just feel like, oh, we can be self-mentored or we can be Instagram mentored, you know. Unfortunately.
I mean, Jesus modeled that, right? Like, he didn't go reach, like, he reached thousands, but like he empowered the disciples to then go reach thousands upon thousands. Right Like, so, and but he equipped them, he empowered them, right? And so imagine the impact if we allow like people to speak into us and then we push out, and then like the exponential like effect.
Yeah 100%.
And to that point, like one thing I've been learning too is like, so with the millennial generation, we were all about doing things independently, you know, because we didn't, like many ways, we didn't have handouts, like, so we were like, it's a grit in the grind. We're gonna figure it out, we'll get it. One thing that they're realizing with the Gen Z generation is like, we can get really dangerous. It's like, I'm gonna prove you wrong generation, right? I'm like, it's not anymore about like, okay, I could do it by myself independently. It's I could do it independently and also show you that I could do it independently. You know, so going back to your point about mentorship is like, one, as mentors from who are a little bit older, we need to show a lot more grace.
Right, 100%.
You know, like what they're going through, their struggles, and just encouraging like the next generation, the ones that are growing up too, is like, we are here, we are available. Like the things that we went through is so we can be able to give you guys the help, the proper help that you need as well. So I just want to encourage the people that are watching in that sense.
Adding on to that, I think, you know, our community all along, I mean, previously, not now, I think we all looked at everything in a judgmental mindset, you know, it's like, this is wrong, this is wrong. And I think like with our generation of leaders, our generation of people, we've taken that judgmental thing out of it. Mm-hmm. We're not judging them for what they're doing. We're just like, I mean, that's what Jesus did, you know. Mm-hmm. I love that, because even though Jesus judged, but you know, he also made sure he loved. Mm-hmm. He's the God of love, and he's also a just God. You know, there's mm-hmm. both sides to Jesus and God that we see. And I think that's like one of the most amazing things about God, like where he loves us and he's also just, you know. Mm-hmm. And he's not all love and all just, he's love and just.
Yeah.
And I think that part, I think that we need to understand too. I mean, yeah, definitely, we are not to judge. It's only God has the authority to judge. But I think we are called to love, you know. Mm-hmm. And no matter what, I mean, yeah, definitely, we tell them, hey, this is wrong. But we don't judge them. We also make sure we take them to a path of love, where we tell them, hey, this is what you can do. This is what God is. This is what Jesus did. And I think that's all what Jesus did, you know. Yeah. I mean, definitely, he could have easily judged us, like, you know, 20, 23 years back and said, you know, no, I'm not coming down. But he just chose to do that because he wanted to love. He loved us more than anything else. So, and I think that love that Jesus showed us, I think, that's the same thing that we need to show to the younger generation, you know, and like not judging them, not telling them, hey, this is wrong, you are wrong, no, but saying like, hey, you know, just like Jesus welcomes you with open arms, I'm here for you. So I think that relationship that we build there, I think that's what is gonna change their mindset.
And I think that's exactly what I was gonna say, what you said at the end, the relationship is at the heart of that, right? If there's not a relationship, there is less likelihood of them hearing any truth that we wanna share, right?
Right.
So at CCU, one of our mottos is grace and truth, right? Mm. It's that, like, there is grace, but truth is big T truth, is what is in the Bible and is Jesus' truth, right? And so there's no moving truth, but there is grace as we share truth with you. Mm. But then notice that in all that Jesus does with us, it's within the context of relationship. He's living in my heart as he convicts me and he teaches me and grows me and refines me, right? It doesn't just happen outside of Jesus standing outside of me and speaking in. He's within and doing that work. And so I think that I had a conversation with leaders of a church one time, and they were saying that they were having this really hard time with one of their youth that was really struggling with identity crisis. Mm-hmm. And they said, how do we speak truth? How do we get them to come to the light, essentially, right? And so my first response, and maybe it wasn't the popular response, and what I said to them was, I want you to journey with them, be in relationship with them. They're not going to be able to or willing to hear anything we have to say without walking beside them and loving them first, right? Hearing their story, hearing their journey, so that we have a platform to bring truth, right? Without that, we don't have not the right, but like we could speak to them, but if we want to make an impact, right, that relationship has to be there. And that's one of the foundational components of counseling too. They say in counseling research, it says, and the relationship is such a huge part. It's not the technique. It's not the therapeutic modality that we use. It's if I have a relationship but with my clients, there's so much more potential for change and long-term growth than if there wasn't a relationship there or a connection there.
I think that's like one of the major problems that Gen Z or even millennial generation, I think all of us actually face, is like finding out who we are, you know? Whereas like, especially, I mean, again, I'm not saying bad about the community, but I was brought up in a Pakama little Pentecostal church, and like, you know, but then like while I was in the Middle East and like raising up in that, it was just like, okay, there was like, you know, okay, you're a pastor's kid or you're an elder's kid, this is what you're like, you know, it's already like said there, you know. I couldn't even do anything wrong because I'm like, I had all the Snoopy eyes everywhere, and not like I didn't want to do it, but you know, but it was kind of like that, where like, you know, your identity is like, okay, yeah, it's like my dad served as an elder for one of the churches, and it's like, okay, I can't screw up, you know. There's a standard that I can't screw up. No, I have to be always holy. I have to
pressure.
Be very... Yeah, the pressure was enormous. And for a while, I was like, who exactly am I? I mean, what exactly am I trying to portray myself as, you know? Is it just like a holy version of myself, or deep... I mean, I can show it outside, like, but deep inside, who am I? Like, what, that big question, who am I? And I think that crisis is there for every single person today, like we said. And for personally for me, I think that I had to take a time with the Lord, just spend time with him and find out. I mean, my identity is found in him. You know, it's like, you know, he made us in his image. Yeah. So we are like him. You know, we share his likeness, we share his nature. So that same nature is there. So I think that is what we need to understand. And I think it's just not like a one prayer thing, like, you know, you pray for 20 minutes, it's like, you know, you have the identity of God.
Yeah.
No, it's not like that. Like you actually walk with God, you know, and that's where your identity is found. And I think a lot of times, like today's generation, we go around everywhere in the world to find what our true identity is, but all we have to do is get on our knees and be in a secret place, where he meets us, I think that's where our identity is, right. And that's where he transforms us.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I think there's a bit of a hole there, right? Like people are in search of that identity and like that purpose, and that sometimes they find it in all the wrong places, and it leads to trouble, right? Because you're searching after a need, right? Because God has built us with this need to be like someone or have an identity. But when we miss who our identity should be in, we start seeking it in other people, other places, right? Like even as a parent, like as a married woman and as a parent, right? My identity can't be in who I am as a wife. It can't be in who I am as a mother, because that's going to fail me at some point. All of these identities are going to fail me at some point, and they're not the perfect identity that I can find in Christ.
Yeah, I think another issue with that too is like what we face, like in the same identity aspect, is entitlement. Mm. I think we, especially Gen Z, we're so entitled. We're like, okay,
you're Gen Z, I'm millennial.
Yeah, argument for later. But I'm just saying for that. But I think like that entitlement is a big time issue. I think we just need to have a title, or we need to have like a position to actually be like, okay, hey, this is what defines me. And I think like that's a big issue, and I think that's very dangerous too. What do you guys think about that?
I mean, I think it's great, because recently we went on a pastoral retreat with our leaders and stuff, and there were some younger, like our pastor's kids, they were on the trip with us, and we were actually talking about this, right? And for the longest time as a leader, I used to always think about it as entitlement, and I had to be really careful, because I had to think that they're also growing in their knowledge and their maturity, you know, their brains are forming and all these things, and so obviously, like when you do grow up, especially for a lot older generation, a lot of it can seem like entitlement, because simply because of the fact that we did do a lot to give the next generation a lot of sacrifices. So did our parents, and stuff like that. So what I've been teaching a lot of them is just appreciation and gratefulness, with that comes honor. A lot of honor comes with that as well. So I've been actually, rather than looking at the Gen Z as a problem, I've been looking at myself as a problem, and being like, I need to be careful, like the words that I say around them, you know, like how I treat them, because it's okay that they're entitled, because they'll eventually figure it out, you know. And so the reason I brought up a pastoral retreat is because we were reading the passage about, it's in Hebrews, and it says like, saying like there is pioneers that went before you, you know, and God has paved the path for them to lead you to be where you are. And a lot of the kids that were reading it, they're like, wow, I never realized it from this perspective. And so it might take time for them to actually realize it, but just as much as the generation above us gave us a lot of grace, I'm realizing they will figure out. A lot of the Gen Zs are only getting into the workforce now. A lot of them are only getting full-time, part-time jobs now, so they'll realize what it means to work your butt off to earn a minimum wage paycheck, you know. And once they go through that phase, they have families and kids, like, you know, we'll see a different side of them. Maybe it'll be another generation where like, man, they don't get it. But that's just the cycle, right?
So. And that's a very empathetic approach, right? Of like seeing where they come from, what their struggle is, hearing them for what they bring, as opposed to, because we can, right, have a very non-empathetic perspective, because we come from a different generation, and so we can't understand fully, but then we can still express empathy without fully understanding. And so I think that just goes so much a long way.
I want to talk about this though. When we were talking about earlier, I think what's important is also teaching discipline.
100%.
Discipline 100%. In many ways, because growing up, I was like, man, just free for all, just do whatever I want to do. But realizing, like, placing boundaries, discovering, like, coping mechanisms, coping skills. Sometimes we in our church, we say mental hygiene. As you know, you brush your teeth in the morning, you don't want to go out of your house with a stinky breath.
Right.
Or putting deodorant on, you know, like, there's certain things that we have to do proactively. Almost some people on a daily basis have to do this every single day in order for either their spiritual health and to grow, your mental health to grow. So I guess in that topic, Nancy, what do you think in that sense, yeah. like when it comes to discipline?
Yeah, absolutely. I think God, again, Jesus models as well. There are a lot of things that we're called to do as believers,
yeah.
right? That our relationship with God doesn't just build on its own or grow on its own. We do have to fertilize it, nurture it, see it grow. And so same thing with mental health, right? In order to see our mental health grow, there's got to be mindfulness practices. There's got to be some good coping skills. You've got to know yourself enough to know, what do I need in these different days, in these different seasons, and be able to then do that, right? Yeah, so it starts with that awareness, but then also having some, my kids and I, we've been talking about creating a coping skills toolbox for us to have at home, but just like a variety of little, like, little activities, some grounding activities. So to know that, hey, if I'm feeling activated, if my emotions are heightened right now, what do I need? Do I need to do some deep breathing? Mm-hmm. Do I need to kind of feel my environment and ground myself and go through my senses? Mm-hmm. Do I need to go sit and read scripture for a little bit? Do I need to go on a walk or do some cardio to get my blood flowing, right? Mm-hmm. And kind of zap me back? Or, you know, so everyone requires a little bit of a different approach in terms of coping skills, but then that goes back to the knowing yourself, right?
Knowing
what you need. Your coping skill may not be mine, and mine may not be the same today as it is tomorrow, right? So just every circumstance is going to look different. But just being sure that we know that there are options available, because a lot of people go a long time, maybe all their lives, not even realizing what they need.
Yeah.
Right? I think it was my, so I have a therapist, and it was my therapist that asked me, so what, I want you to really think about what you need in these next few days. And I was like, that's a good question. What do I need? You know, I'm really good at telling clients, right? Yeah. And I analyze those things, but what do I need?
Because,
you
know, looking into your own life, it's so different.
Life happens, right? Yeah. You've got families, you've got work, you've got like busy schedules, and everyone kind of glorifies being busy these days. And so you're so busy that we don't even realize, when's the last time I checked in and asked myself, what do I need?
Wow.
Do I need a break? Am I okay right now, right? And that goes for mental well-being, spiritual well-being, like your family's well-being. Like, how are you in all the different areas, not just you personally, right?
Yeah. I think that's like, you know, what you need today is not what you need tomorrow.
Correct.
And what you need tomorrow is not what you have, what you need 1 year or 2 years down. Like,
that's right.
Like, I have this mom, a very close friend, so he's from India. So he did this, like, he bought a 5-year journal a few years back, okay? He wrote down that what he wrote in year one is not the same thing that he wanted in year two or year three or year four, year five. Mm-hmm. So he asked me to do this, like, so he's like, Matthews, get a 5-year journal, write down. So I started like in Feb. So I'm writing down like stuff that I feel like, I'm very enthusiastic. So if I was like, you know, if like, you know, Ruben comes like, hey, let's start a coffee shop, I'd be like, okay, let me Google it. What do we need? So that's the kind of
business plan by the next day.
I'll have a business plan by the next
day. That's kind
of fast. So I'm like that kind of, I'm so enthusiastic. So my friend told me, it's like, it's good that you're in. I think a lot of people in the in our community are enthusiastic.
Yeah.
But he said, like, it's also dangerous at times. You know, you can be enthusiastic about everything, and it can burn you out too.
Yeah.
So he told me, get a 5-year journal. It's like, I started this, and I feel like so much good, because I wrote on the little things like, okay, I want to do this, I want to do that. And maybe, like, even, like, it's been, like, 2-3 months. It started, like, I think it started in the end of Jan. Like, now I'm like, I don't even want to do some of the stuff that I started in Jan. You know, I'm like, it's like, there's no point in doing that. I was like, it just makes you think. Because you just want to be like, you know, I think that part is also needed, like where we write down stuff, like, you know, what we, like in Habakkuk it says, write down your visions that God gives you. And I think that's very important too, because if you, I mean, there's a statistics that which said, like, you know, you are more likely to achieve something that you wrote down more than that you think in your brain.
Yeah.
So I think that process is there. And even the ones that we write down, we don't even do 50% of it. It's only, again, like less than 25 or 30% of it that we actually want to achieve.
Yeah.
So I think it's like very important to actually know what you want, like, you know, what you want today or what you want tomorrow. Like, you know, it changes, you know, it's just like we live in a world that's changing so fast and rapidly, so, and drastically. So I think that is important, like, you know, knowing what you want, like, and, you know, and there's like, there's obviously the what you want, and there's a need and want. So, you know, there's like, and at the end of the day, it's the need that matters, not the want. And, you know, if, and that, I think that's how we, I think I personally, I would say, like, I just to add in, like, you know, it's like what you need and what you want is actually something that you really need to weigh in at the end of the day.
I think it goes, I mean, what you said was processing, right? We talk about processing all the time in the mental health world. Like, there are things we have to process, our days, we have to process some of our emotions, and sometimes people don't know what that means, really.
Yeah, no.
And all it really boils down to is maybe spending a little bit of time writing about what you're feeling, writing about your day, spending a little time talking to your spouse or a family member or a friend or trusted relative that, like, hey, this is how I'm doing right now, right? Mm. And really all, it can be one-on-one with a person, it can be on paper, it can be a drawing for all that matters. All that matters is that your brain is kind of going through and putting some pictures or words to what our left brain knows. So like that that creative piece is that right brain. Mm. And so the writing, the drawing, or like processing verbally.
Yeah.
And so to, when those two connect, that's when processing happens and you can get some emotions out that way.
Mm. Yeah. I think like even I'm learning processing too, even like later on in life too, because like growing up, like how you deal with things is how you just think the normal is.
Yeah.
You know, like if your family's so used to being angry whenever there's a situation, you just automatically assume that's just who you are as a person.
Yeah.
For me is being passive. Mm-hmm. You know, I'll just shut down, like don't talk to anybody. Mm-hmm. My second option is eating food. Like fried chicken. I'm like, hey, if I have fried chicken, eat it, watch TV, I'm good.
That's in your coping skills toolbox.
Exactly.
Fried chicken.
Exactly. Yeah. My wife would say, don't put that in your coping skills toolbox. But I've been also realizing a lot, like you can rediscover new ways of doing it. And like what you thought was normal, you can find other ways of processing. And do you think it's like healthier ways, or do you think it's necessarily another perspective?
So I think like for example, for you with the fried chicken, right? Like it speaks to a need.
Yeah.
Right?
Right.
And so if we can evaluate for ourselves, what is the need that's, okay, let's say anything maladaptive, right? Smoking, drugs, like things like that, right? So like anything that's negative, that's a bad substance in our body, right? So if we really evaluate, what is the need that's speaking to? Is it an avoidance technique? Is it a deflection technique? What is it? What are you distracting yourself? Are you trying to get away from people or be around people? Whatever it is, whatever need it speaks to, then you can find something else that's positive that speaks to that same need. So you replace them, right?
So
as opposed to going, hey, let's give you coffee instead of fried chicken. Well, if it doesn't meet your need, it's not going to translate, right?
Yeah.
You might still go to the fried chicken because forget coffee. That's just a food item, right? But like if I gave you a pillow to punch instead of your fried chicken, well, that may not work. It doesn't speak to the same need. So you may still go back to the other. I'm calling your fried chicken maladaptive coping,
fine.
By the way.
I love it.
but you know what I mean? So if we understand the need, then we know what to replace it with. And we can find something that's positive, that's good for us, that replaces it.
So good.
So good.
I love that.
Yeah.
That was great. Thank you, Nancy. Yeah.
Absolutely.
Yeah. And just because of time, we can even kind of shift it a little bit and talk about your entrepreneurship a little bit as well.
Yeah.
Because as bellwethers, we stand on three pillars, which is creativity, commerce, and
church.
Yeah. I was like, what's the third one? Forgot for a second. And so we're leaning a little bit more in the commerce side of things, which is you know, you taking the step to start your business, doing all that, especially like, you know, all the, you know, struggles that you went through, all the challenges. What are some things that, you know, you can speak into this and maybe it could be advice or some challenges that you went through that.
Right. Also, as a follow up to that, I think, you know, you start your business when you were a mom of two, right?
Yeah.
And I think that's really amazing because today, like a lot of people are not ready to take that risk, you know. And I mean, personally, like I don't have an issue because, like, you know, I'm not married, like I can take risk. I'm like, I have all my 20s to finish that off, you know. But I think a lot of people who are married, who have kids, are kind of like in their 30s or 40s. It's so hard for them to take a risk from that point because they need to think about their family.
Right.
So from that aspect too, if you can shed some light, I think that would
absolutely
be amazing.
Yeah. So I think if I had to say first, it probably started with a vision, right? Of like, this is something I want to see look different. This is something I want to see change. And I had a friend in support, right? And so as we had started having conversations, we were like, something needs to shift here. And it was kind of in, you know, similar to my early stages in the mental health journey. My goal and my passion behind becoming a counselor is I want to see the stigma change, right? I don't know if I'll see it in my lifetime completely transform, but I want to see people more receptive and open to all things mental health. And that's why I started this journey. And so with this academiac journey, I think it was kind of similar of like academia is so behind in the digital world, in the digital marketplace world especially. And so we saw a need. we've looked and we're like, we can't find resources when we need it. And so we're like, let's create a place where all these resources are kept. Mm-hmm. And some of the systems that were in place before were so antiquated and they were so old and from like 3 centuries ago. And we're like, we need to move forward, right? And so it started with that vision of, hey, and it felt like this could be a good idea. This could be profitable. There's something here, right? And whether it gets anywhere or not, we knew that there was a reason we wanted to do this. There was a purpose, right, that was driving it.
Yeah.
And then I think next thing would probably be support, right? Mm-hmm. If I didn't have the support of my friend who started it with me, if I didn't have the support of my husband who's been supportive the whole way, right? Mm-hmm. So when I started telling people the vision, when everyone agreed and supported me, were encouraging, that was such a crucial like pillar for us, right? Mm-hmm. To get started and to get going on this mission. And then too, we have a family. And I think part of I like to kind of see things happen too, kind of like what you were saying earlier. And so I think part of the challenge for me was this is going to have to be at a slower pace. And that was one of the boundaries I set for myself. And so knowing my limits, right?
Yeah.
Like I'm a full-time professor. I'm now program director. I've got 2 young kids. Yeah. I don't have the capacity to pour 45 hours a week into a startup. Mm-hmm. And that's okay. Right. And so that's what I had to keep telling myself that, hey, this might be a slower build, but that is what we're capable of right now. There's a reason why it's slower. And we've seen, even in my own journey, I've seen why God has allowed it to be slower. There are things that have happened in the last 6 months that have prepared me for this new leadership position at CCU. Mm. And so I see why it's going at a slower pace, but then knowing, hey, this is a goal. And if it doesn't work out at the end, it's also okay.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
I knew my limits. I knew how much I was willing to invest in it.
Yeah.
Monetarily, time-wise. Right, all the investments, right?
Yeah.
And so once I established those limits between me and my husband, then we knew, okay, well, if we're willing to give this up, right, then whatever the result, we'll be okay with it, right? Because it's not like we're, you know, selling our house and, you know, giving up too much. We had a limit. We had our boundaries set around that. And then it was okay. And just being patient with the process and showing ourselves grace, because we still do believe in the vision. It's just going at a slower rate, and that's okay.
And I think unless you try it out, you never find out.
Exactly.
You know?
Right.
And I think that's one of my convictions and my policies. Like, if it doesn't work out, it doesn't work out.
Yeah.
But I just don't want to live in the regret of what could have happened if I tried that. So, I mean, I think that's like, you know, I mean, we're doing some stuff together.
Yeah.
We're like, bro, let's do this. You know, I was like, we'll just do it. I mean, you know, you never know it unless you try it out. You know, it's just like you just had to put it out there.
Right, exactly.
I think, like, especially like as South Asians too, specifically, like I think we need to be willing to take those risks because it has an impact generationally.
Yeah.
You know,
the
fact that you took that risk is now, it's benefiting so many other people and generations as well too.
Yeah.
So I think that's a big thing. I think we cannot say no to what God wants to do through us.
Yeah.
It's also about setting a precedence. Like, you know, when when Nancy steps into it, it's like, it's giving motivation, and it's also helping others, like similar to you, or maybe a 30-year-old guy who's like, you know, who's having 2 kids. He's like, how do I step into business? And you're doing it. You're slaying it there. He's like, okay, so there is a grace for that. I can actually get that. I can do that. So I think that also helps people, like, you know, and at the end of the day, it's like, you know, I think that's what the kingdom is about. Like, it's not about us winning. It's or me winning as an individual. It's us winning together as a team.
Yeah.
So, and I think as we inspire more people to step into business or step into their professions and the things that they want to, I think at the end of the day, the kingdom is winning. You know, the kingdom is advancing. It's God who is winning. And I think that's so much important when it comes to business or, you know, or your marketplace, anything that you do. You know, the more you advance, it has, like, at the end of the day, all that matters is the kingdom.
That's right. And I so appreciate that you guys are having this conversation about entrepreneurship in the Christian world, because the times are getting tougher, right? And we are in more need today of Christians who are in businesses and in entrepreneurship than ever before. And we say all the time in our program, we need counselors who are believers out there in the world.
100%.
Same thing. We need business-minded individuals that are believers that are out there in the world transforming what the business world looks like. So this is very exciting.
Wow.
Yeah.
Thank you very much.
Thank you. Yeah.
I mean, that's what we believe here. And even just doing this podcast, and we want to tell people stories like yours, for example.
Yeah.
And We really believe in people, you know. Mm-hmm. That's the biggest thing. We believe what the impact that other people have in their communities and other people's lives. Right. And if we can have these conversations, like especially your story, and there could be someone who's watching, literally right now, who's like, oh, man, I'm thinking about maybe starting my own practice. Yeah. I don't know how to tell my parents if I want to do counseling or social work or whatever it be. And just that boost of encouragement mm-hmm. can just set the precedent for like generations to come, you know.
It might be someone who's viewing this 6 months, maybe 5 years down the lane. They might see this and it's like, you know, maybe they might see us somewhere in the airport or somewhere around the world, say, you know, hey, your episode made me inspire me. I think that's like the greatest thing that we can receive, like, you know. That's how like our goal achieved, you know. That's like vision achieved, you know. This is what we want. And even if it's a single person, like I tell Ruby, like, even if you had to spend $100,000 on a conference and one person gets saved, that's worth it, and it's 100% worth it. So I think, you know, it's just like, I just really hope, like, you know, everyone who's like, you know, who just steps out into that faith, you know, you know, it's like, you know, get out of the boat. I think we were speaking about it, like, last time on one of our podcasts too, like, you know, it was the first time Jesus was in the boat to calm the winds. But the second time he was outside the boat to count the wind. So it's always like, you know, there's always in the boat you can do stuff, but also there are stuff you got to do outside of the boat. So, and I think, like, you know, and I think it's like going to be a season, like a lot of people are stepping out into the entrepreneurship field as well.
You know, when I started, I would always say, and it's almost, you know, God has a funny sense of humor, right? God, I would always say, you know, I don't know if I will live to see the day when mental health stigma has diminished and people are more open. And I would say, like, that's my dream, right? My dream is to see that mental health awareness is growing and that our people are getting the help that they need and not suffering in silence. And so over time, so first few years, I was so discouraged because I was like, I don't have a single Indian client. I don't know what I'm doing, right? Like, I thought this was what I was supposed to do. And it was interesting. Along my journey now, I've been a counselor for about 8 or 9 years now. And along my journey now, at this point, a majority of my caseload is Indian clients. Yeah. And so I had always said, I don't know if I'll ever see the day. And it's almost like God is saying, look at what I can do, right? You didn't believe that this would happen, but look at what I can do. And so that, I guess when you guys are talking, I was thinking, as my prayer for you guys too, that look at what God can do, right? Hopefully in 10 years, you're looking back and seeing like the depth of the impact. And so God can do it.
I mean, our humble beginnings. You saw the behind the scenes and everything, right?
The chaos
behind everything. Again, we know, like God says in the Bible, like create like monuments, you know, or like in one, like the living stones, you know, like places of remembrance, right? And so, like encouraging people, like what you're doing, like even like your kids growing up, being like, my mom did this, you know, and even for us, we say like, I know this podcast is probably going to be living somewhere on YouTube, and we're probably going to go back and watch it and be like, man, what were we doing? But, you know, our kids can be like, man, my father did this, or in some other people's cases, if you're writing books or you're taking these risks, it's like you're creating like these memorious moments. I mean, these moments for your future generations to remember, like, hey, my forefathers, my parents did this, you know, so people in our community and stuff did that. So
I think we're almost towards the end of our session, so before we wrap up, like, how can we pray for you this season? What's some of the things that, you know, that we can pray over you or speak life over?
I appreciate you guys asking that. I think I'm in this new season of leadership in the program director role. I'm also, I mean, unexpectedly ended up starting a completely virtual practice too, which was just last minute, kind of landed in my lap. Anyway, all this to say, there's just a lot more leadership roles in my life right now that I could definitely use just prayer for. I, you know, I'm just navigating new waters and just as a family too, right? We're just being faithful what we've been given, right? Whether that's in our work roles, in our parenting roles, in our, you know, roles towards each other. So just prayer for us to steward all of that we've been given well.
How can people reach out to you and connect with you?
Absolutely. You can, my email address is nancythomascounseling@gmail.com. that's probably the best way to reach me. And so I would be happy to connect with anybody.
We'll put out Nancy's email links and everything associated with this episode description, so if you guys want to reach out, go ahead, reach out to her directly. And if you guys need an offer card, Belvedere20 is the offer card. No, I'm just kidding. No offer card.
You discuss that with her first.
I'm just kidding. That's all that. Okay. Yeah. Good. Once again, thank you so much, Nancy, for your
really
time. Yeah, everything that you said. I think really hope, like, you know, it's gonna change some people's life. And I really hope, like, as an entrepreneur, as a counselor, you're going to excel. You know, and definitely as parents, you guys are gonna raise up some amazing kids, you know, who are gonna take over the world for Jesus. Yeah. So we're so excited for you guys, and you know, we can't wait to see. Like, you know, I think probably like maybe a few years down the lane, we'll do a success story.
Right.
Like, hey, I came here in 2023, and look where I am. So
we will have a better set that time.
We'll have a studio by then. So, you know,
that's right. That's right. Well, thank you guys for having me. It's been a pleasure.
Of course. Thank you very much.
Thank you, everyone, for watching. Thank you so much. That was Dr. Nancy Thomas. So do reach out to her. And thank you so much for following us. We'll just stay tuned for our next episode.